previously on Getting the Mecha.
Yeah, okay, Jujutsu Kaisen, good anime, well animated. It has a very interesting way of going about things in terms of how its director does a decent amount of directing, as well as animating too. I think I didn't expect JJK to be this good. Honestly, I'm not gonna try and hide it, but I didn't expect this level of analysis for JJK, at least from my part. I'm Jamal, and you're listening to Guests in the Mecha, your weekly anime and manga analysis podcast. From inspiring arcs to game-changing cinematography, I'm on a journey to try and make sense of it all, episode by episode. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to Get in the Mecha, and in today's episode we are looking at Why Jujutsu Kaisen Surpassed My Expectations. Very weird title for what I'd usually go for, but that's what we're doing today because I really need to talk about this anime on a general level. There will be a lot of animation talk this episode, but I want to talk about it a bit more generally as to saying that we're honing in on animation. So for anyone who is new to the podcast, I am Jamal. I like to think a lot about anime and hopefully get a bit of value thinking about it on a bit of a deeper level. But whether it is that is obviously up for interpretation. And yes, today I want to discuss Jujutsu Kaisen. So today I want to talk about directors who have worked on Jujutsu Kaisen and why I feel like that really ups the level of this anime. And I also want to, for the first time, really address narrative as well. Something that I haven't really touched when discussing this anime when I have done it. So yeah, that is the game plan for this episode. Let's get right into it. Here is episode 86 of Getting the Mecha, a look at why JJK surpassed my expectations. Before we get into the episode, I like to always give you a lowdown of the spoilers in this episode. And obviously, I'm talking about Jujutsu Kaisen, and there will be spoilers for JJK, so I'm going to be talking about the majority of the show. I'm going to zoom in on very specific parts as I get through this episode, notably episode 13 and 17, if I remember correctly, because those are pretty big episodes for this show from the directional standpoint. As you'll notice as we get through this episode, there is a very specific topic which I'm going to be hitting multiple times, and it's this idea of diversity. I'm referring to diversity mostly on the visual level. Diversity is in its directors and who is directing and their styles and how that adds to the larger sort of mosaic that is JJK. And that is really where I think this anime shines and why it's, in summary, went past what I thought it could be, because it's is so versatile visually, to the point to which I'm just I'm in awe sometimes at what will actually happen, because one day I am looking at the episode that happened last week and I'm like, okay, this is really cool, and then we progress about six episodes later and I'm seeing something completely different that is also really awesome too, and it's all within the realm and bounds of what this show is, but it goes beyond it in a way, and that's what I want to cover today. So let's hop into our first imaginary bullet point, which is this notion of numerous directors getting a lot of mileage out of the content. I'm talking in part about the manga, but also just about the general things and assets that the anime has. So the character designs and how those were handled for the anime, but also stuff like the events and the plots, the settings, and just the general things which make Jujutsu Kaisen a thing and how it sets itself apart. It's how these directors handle those that I think really makes things work out very well. One of my favorite examples of this is the kind of different educational approach that JJK takes, where yes, it is educational, but it doesn't really take place exactly in a school per se, and as a result, with a lot of things that happen outdoors, it allows us to do some really cool stuff. For example, stuff like opening 2, which takes place mostly outside, but that creates just the possibilities for so many amazing scenes to take place. It gives the opportunity for directors like Shingo Yamashita, who directed both openings, to take advantage of the very grim approach, or the rather duller feeling or lower feeling that we're getting post Mahito arc. But when I say low, just to clarify, I don't mean bad as in, oh, it's not as good. I just mean low as in after the events, a pretty sad event taking place. There's a much darker mood that we get from the second opening. And I credit Yamashita for taking advantage of that and showing it through the setting. So I suppose that's pathetic fallacy and all these other types of things, which he is extremely good at picking up on. I suppose with a director like Shingo Yamashita, who has worked quite a lot with stuff like Water before in his own key animation work, this wasn't much of a difficulty to understand and get to grips with, but again, because they've worked with it. In a rather different way, this same thing applies to Hironori Tanaka's episode of the show as well, which was episode 13. This was the concluding episode of the Mahito arc, and I don't think it could be done any better, and I didn't think I could choose anyone that would maybe do it better than Tanaka, because they feel almost suited to do an episode like this. Tanaka was basically built to handle a character like Mahito with their long hair and how their model can be distorted so much, because that is exactly what Tanaka as an animator goes for most of the time. I spoke about this last episode when we were talking about Baki Monogatari and the Suruga Monkey arc, and I'm basically returning to them right here. A lot of emphasis on distortion of hair and body parts to make this very sort of wavy feel. That's a very bad description, but I'm sure you get my point. And when we think of how curses are, and as Mahito proved, they have the ability to distort their bodies and change form and shape and their identities very easily. And I think that Tanaka, as I said, who focuses on distortion, does a great job of directing this episode, as they bring their skill set and expertise to this episode and to the story, which is Jujutsu Kaisen. I'm not particularly saying that this is new to the show. This idea that curses can shift quite easily isn't something which only existed within the anime, that's not my point, but what I do mean is that I think that Tanaka brings this out even more. When Nanami and Yuji are fighting Mahito, and then Mahito then goes on to use their domain expansion, just before that, you see the true brutality of it all, and how curses can really look, and just how nasty they can be. So The Creek animates this, also an amazing animator, The Creek animates this section where it's the meme section, basically, where they're both hitting Mahito at the same time, and they're just going in turns, and it's just super cool. And that, I think, is just such a great demonstration in how, I don't have it here, there will be Sakuraba links and all that in the description, but I love how the hair flips outwards and it sort of inverts, and it's being knocked between them, and the face distorts and it feels all pasty. And this is what I think that the animator of A Creek, as well as just everyone on this episode, and the director, obviously, Tanaka, is able to bring out in this episode, the nasty nature of curses. And I feel like this is why animation is important, because we're able to show these a lot better. Okay, maybe not better, but more in a much more obvious way, which can be understood through movement. As we as people move, we can resonate and communicate this much better through animation. We'll end up cycling back into this episode because I find it a very important one, but what I am just trying to say, I'll summarize upon the summary, is that characterization and who a character is can really come through from animation alone. Just like when we're talking about Wonder Egg and why character acting is super important, I even wrote a whole article on it too. It's the same with Jujutsu Kaisen and its combat as well, and Tanaka just does a great job of proving how important it is for understanding how curses work and what they are. So I suppose you could say, if I'm to stretch it a bit, I suppose you could say that it is building upon its source material in some sense. And then there's the final director who I wanted to hone in on for this episode, which is Shota Gosho-Zono, who directed episode 17 of the show. This, alongside episode 13, is probably my favorite episode of JJK for a variety of reasons, not just in terms of how it's animated and who's on it, but in part also because of who is on it, because that's what makes it so special to me. Similarly to the other directors, they are great at taking advantage of what they have and what the production is. In terms of color, I wouldn't call it the best in terms of its compositing, but also just how it blends a lot of these purples with greens and grays and stuff like that. The contrast, I wouldn't say, is very great there. But that being said, Gosho-Zono is able to take advantage of this to an extent, and with the very dense environment that the forest is and the backgrounds and how they are for the tournament arc of the series, I'm really in love with how they use 3D backgrounds to add a sense of depth to what's already quite a dense background, which I think livens things up quite a bit. And I'm surprised that it was used, I believe, for some previous episodes, but I think Gosho-Zono really took advantage of it in a way that I could really understand a lot more, particularly with the trees and everything like that, and how they most of the arc was taking place in this forest. It just works really well in a way which I could resonate really well with, or it was just very readable overall. They also do an awesome job of contrasting this, which was very in-depth environment. When we're doing the flashbacks, we have a lot of shadowless drawings as well, and Kageneshi drawings, and that just, I love that dynamic. It's very well thought out and something that I didn't really think that someone would choose to do. That's really my overall point with this anime from the perspective of its directors and episode directors. It's constantly surprising me, and I'm a very big fan of this new eyes idea. Something I talk about quite a lot about online, and it's when we have a freelancer sort of system going on, that's a very bad way to describe it, but at least when we have work that takes on freelancers, we're able to see it from the perspective of their eyes, as opposed to, say, someone who's worked on the show for 15 episodes. And that's not a bad thing. There are a lot of productions where we have, say, a few people who touch action the most or regularly. If you take something like Demon Slayer, which is an awesome production, or at least a visual spectacle, we have people like Masayuki Kunihiro or Nozomu Abe who touch a lot of these action moments. It's kind of not dedicated to them, but their approach shines through most of the time, and that's how we get this synergy between the fights and stuff like that. And there is nothing wrong with this approach, but I am a big fan of the approach that is much more diverse in how we see very different takes on the designs and on the characters and such. And that's how we get episodes like episode 13 and 17, because people who have maybe seen the show, or at least maybe they've never even touched the show, they get to bring their unique take to it to some extent. Obviously, it does go through corrections and checks and things like that, but they get to bring their take to something which they have probably never seen, maybe have never seen. And I think that can be very refreshing. It can bring out things which we never thought were really possible with a series like this. And that's why, again, I go back to episode 13 with Hironori Tanaka. It built to make this episode, yes, but not just based on their style, but just being a fresh eye on the series, which maybe some other directors didn't really have the advantage of getting. My fears were really alleviated by the visual diversity of this series, and that's why this whole episode is about, why it surpassed my expectations, because I didn't expect it to be this visually diverse, you see. I thought it would be pretty stagnant in a way, or at least it would center around a few animators specifically, and they would do a lot of the quote-unquote heavy lifting when it comes to the fighting and stuff like that. And that isn't a bad thing. That happens on a lot of productions, or on a decent amount of them. One of my favorites is Tetsuo and Buddy Decode, where we have a few animators that actually handle combat, the main two being Shingo Yamashita, as I mentioned in this episode, and Norio Matsumoto. Those are the two animators that mostly handle the combat, and it turns out great, but I'm also a fan of seeing different approaches to fighting, and that is where Jujutsu Kaisen really filled that in for me. It's kind of a qualm which I have with Battle Shonen, and that's a bit contradictory because I know I literally just said that Tetsuo and Buddy Decode's battles are very, not same-ish, but they're handled by the same people and we get similar styles and results as a result of, you know, about 2 to 3 people handling most of the combat. But there are some shows out there that have managed to satisfy me in that department. So take Mob Psycho 100. Naruto does a really good job of this, I think. One Punch Man, of course, that's probably the king of it alongside Mob. And then another one, which probably won't get mentioned as much, is Yosakura Quartet as well. It's not like series don't do this, but I suppose it goes down to things like creative control and how the aesthetic unifies and if it should be unified. It gets kind of philosophical and things and gets into things I also can't explain that I'm sure happened behind the scenes. I'm going to end up drawing a few comparisons here, but when we think of an anime like Naruto, or at least Naruto Shippuden as well, it draws on, or a lot of its amazing moments draw on, this repeating cycle of regular animators. If we take Hiroyuki Yamashita or Naoki Kobayashi or Norio Matsumoto, as I said before, that's not the complete of it. When we get a bit further into the series, we end up seeing names like Chengsei Huang as well. So there is some of that variety in there that I think Naruto is able to give and offer. Same for Mob Psycho 100 and One Punch Man Season 1 as well. The slight difference I'd say with this is that it's really about getting or being able to get loads of amazing people into the same quote-unquote room to work on one project, which is absolutely insane. So everyone from Yutaka Nakamura to Wellen Zhang on Mob Psycho 100 to Gosai Oda to Yuki Hayashi to Arafumi Imai again on One Punch Man and so many more. And in some ways, I'd say that Jujutsu Kaisen does a very similar thing. It is able to get so many awesome people to work on one project. And it might not be as frequent as in, I suppose with something like One Punch Man or Mob Psycho 100 and how they're a lot shorter, they're 12 episodes or 13, I believe. And as a result, it ends up being kind of more back to back. And there's a bit more space for breathing in JJK, but I say space more as in just the quote-unquote cool moments. I don't mean as in breathing space for the production itself. But even so, I still think it's worth a lot of credit how it's able to get so many talented people together. And I think 13 and 17 are where this really adds up and accumulates, where we finally see that all these people have come together finally to put something together in one episode. Whether it's animators like The Creek or Hiro, who's on the penultimate episode of the Mahito arc, Lee for Tatsuya Yoshihara, or any of them, and more of course, it's just the fact that they're all able to be there together, I think is such a big thing for the show and the anime. And honestly, that's really what got me excited for this, because almost every day or every week, I would go on Twitter and I'd hear someone saying that, you know, Yoshihara was on the episode this week, or, oh, you know, Tanaka was on the episode this week. I'd just get so excited. And that's really what drew me into this series, because of who is on it and how they're working together. So moving on from direction, I want to take a look at the narrative elements and the story elements of JJK and why I do enjoy it, and ultimately why it surpassed my expectations. I will be honest here on the podcast and say that it wasn't something that instantly resonated with me. I think I would have done this much later, much sooner if I enjoyed it so much from the beginning. And I'm not going to say that I didn't hate it or something, I didn't dislike it, but it wasn't my favorite thing to watch, it wasn't my priority when it first came out, and that's why I waited for a while to watch them as they stacked up. in terms of the plot, there was a motivation there. There was the Sukuna's fingers and all that. I'm not denying it. My look at this series isn't really to try and take it apart and say that it didn't have this and this why I didn't like it. It is more so that I wasn't that invested in what was already on the table. And that is me with the first half, maybe, or at least pretty much the first half of this anime. I just honestly didn't find it that compelling, or I just didn't feel very intrigued personally. But things began to change when Mahito arc came about. Mahito arc for me really set the scene and lit up this series, as it started to rise in tensions and it felt like there was a motivation there. What are these motivations? I say these motivations are the escape of Mahito, him being able to get away with what he's done. And obviously, when we say what has been done, that is the death of Junpei, or killing Junpei, basically. I feel like this really ignited the show and the passion of the show in how it was about making sure that this sort of thing wouldn't happen, and also kind of avenging Junpei in a way. I am going to make another kind of weird comparison, but I like to think of what happened at the end of Mahito arc kind of like the conclusion to Tower of God season 1, or the prologue of Tower of God, if you want to call it that. Prior, there's a motivation to climb up the tower, but after something spoilery happens, then that is where things are ignited. As you can tell, analogies just aren't my forte, but I hope you can understand, at least if you've read Tower of God, what I'm trying to say, or even if you watched the anime, it's the same idea. And if not, then just understand that what I mean by this is that Mahito arc, for me, is what kicked it into gear, and it really whipped it into shape, and that's why I'm really invested in it now. We're gonna kind of loop back into animation, but what also just drew me in terms of the series as a whole and why I decided to watch it post episode 10 or so, it was, again, its visual diversity. Tanaka put together what was probably the most exciting Christmas episode I could ask for. Directing, storyboarding, doing animation directing, and even some key animation presumably on this episode. They did so much, but it worked so well, honestly. And I still stand by the fact that it is probably one of the best episodes of 2020 for that purpose. What is so special about episodes 17 and 13 is that they showed me what JJK could be, and I was insanely motivated to continue the show knowing what it could be, and it continued to reproduce this as we went along. Not every episode is an episode 17 or 13. That would be asking for too much, honestly, for any show. But these episodes just gave such a great indication of what it could escalate to and what it could all amount to. And that is, in summary, why I have enjoyed Jujutsu Kaisen so far. With that being said, that is the analysis for this week. Let's jump over to closing thoughts, and I will briefly give you what I think about Jujutsu Kaisen so far in a short little summary. As you probably got from the title of this podcast episode, Jujutsu Kaisen did surprise me. It took me off guard because it went from something which I thought would be of, say, medium enjoyment to something that I in fact really enjoy watching each week. Why exactly is this the case? It comes down to two things. The Mahito arc, as well as its amazing range of staff members from directors to animators, etc. There are many directors which I really like on this series, from Hironori Tanaka to Shingo Yamashita to Shota Goshizono. So many talented individuals have worked on this anime together and have been able to produce such a great piece of work as a whole. And I think that really comes as a result of having these fresh takes on the series, which really add to characterization and all these other things that are already embedded. But that is really brought out into something that is much greater, or maybe not greater is the term, but at least it's brought out even more and made even more obvious as to these elements. On the narrative side, what really did it for me was the Mahito arc. And you could argue that, I've made this argument throughout the episode, that it's really what set the flame for the show. It's what ignited the show for me. You could make the argument that those episodes needed to happen in order for this sort of payoff to work, or this payoff system to really come together. And I can agree with that, actually. Those episodes really excited me because they got together staff members that I never thought would really come onto the series. And also, it set a much more tangible ambition for me, or not really an ambition, it's not even a goal, it's more of just a message that comes out at the end of Mahito arc. And I think that is the backdrop for a lot of what's to come, and that's why I'm enjoying it a lot more, because it feels much closer, it feels much more personal, rather than we're going to collect some fingers for a one of the most famous curses out there. And that's not to criticize it, just to make that clear. I'm not disliking what it sets up to begin with, but I felt like that really got better and I felt more engaged with what it set up towards the middle of the show. In short, I didn't know how much potential JJK had, but with episodes like episode 13 and 17, I was made aware that there is so much of it within this anime, and I'm sure that there's so much more to come. Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. That has been episode 86. I hope you did enjoy this one. And I definitely did. It's been fun talking about Jujutsu Kaisen at length. I haven't really been able to do it like this because we're usually very organized and talking about different people. But it was fun to just talk about it generally and what I think about this anime, because I don't think I've really relayed my opinions on it very much. I've spoken about it technically, but not really, how are you enjoying it? And being able to do that has been a really fun thing for this episode. In order to support this podcast, there are a few things you can do. You can leave it a review on Apple Podcasts. That is probably the most helpful thing you can do for getting more people to actually listen to this podcast, and I'd really appreciate it if you did that. And then there are the YouTube stuff you could do. So if you could like the video or the podcast, subscribe to the channel so you can get the notifications. The bell would also be really cool as well if you want it on time. And then a comment as well, be it how you found the podcast, that would really help out. Or even if there's just a point which you want to elaborate on or talk about, because my comment section is a bit dry. So I'm very open to have longer discussions in a YouTube comment section if that's what you would like. And then two more things. You can follow me on Twitter. I haven't been promoting my Twitter lately, so I might as well do that. At 1,000 followers, I'm actually going to be watching Raz F on as quick as I can when I get the 1,000 followers. So if you do really want me to watch Raz F on, then follow me on Twitter. That is at GetInTheMecha. And then finally, if you want to, again, support the podcast, one thing you can do is if you tell a friend about this show or podcast you listen to, especially if they like the topics on here, it's not only good for me, but it's good for them as well, because that gives them a great, or I hope, great podcast to listen to. But that is it for this week. Thank you for listening. I will see you hopefully next week on whatever we're talking about, because we bounce between topics quite a lot here. I have been your host, Jamar, today. Have a great weekend. And this has been Get in the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows. Synthwave by Alex, by Alex McCulloch. Mandatory Overtime by Joth. Difference by Chasers Gaming. And Anomaly by Eric Medea's UndersoundImage.org.